The following is a meeting with devotees with His Holiness Srila Satsarupa Das Goswami, given on February 27, 1999, in Baltimore, Maryland.
I'm reading a verse from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Antyalila Chapter 1, text 188. This chapter is called Rupa Goswami's Meeting with the Lord. And it's the chapter where Rupa Goswami is reading from his dramas, and Lord Chaitanya and his close associates are listening and commenting and very much appreciating. So this verse is actually a verse from Lalita Madhava by Srila Rupa Goswami, placed in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Harim udishate rajo bhara puratak sangam ayat yamum tama Vrajavama drisham na padhati pakata sarva drisha shutir api. The dust from cows and calves on the road creates a kind of darkness, indicating that Krishna is returning home from the pasture. Also, the darkness of evening provokes the gopis to meet Krishna. Thus, the pastimes of Krishna and the gopis are covered by a kind of transcendental darkness and are therefore impossible for ordinary scholars of the Vedas to see. Purport. This verse from the Lalita Madhava 123 is spoken by Purnamasi in a conversation with Gargi. Krishna stated in Bhagavad Gita, Trigunya Vishaya Veda Nistrigunya Bhavarjuna. Thus he advised Arjuna to rise above the modes of material nature, for the entire Vedic system is filled with descriptions involving Sattvaguna, Rajaguna, and Tamaguna. People are generally covered by the quality of Rajaguna and are therefore unable to understand the pastimes of Krishna with the gopis of Braja. Moreover, the quality of Tamaguna further disturbs their understanding. In Vrindavan, however, although Krishna is covered by the hazy darkness of the dust, the gopis can nevertheless understand that within the dust storm is Krishna. Because they are his topmost devotees, they can perceive his hand in everything. Thus, even in the dark or in a hazy storm of dust, devotees can understand what Krishna is doing. The purport of this verse is that Krishna is never lost under any circumstances to the vision of exalted devotees like the gopis. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pastaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pucharane Nirbhishesha Sanyavadi Pastata De Satarane. I can't read Sanskrit, so I don't know what the music and imagery is like in that language, but the this English translation by Srila Prabhupada of this verse is very beautiful. And it didn't spring just automatically from the synonyms either. It's a very creative translation. And it has many levels of meaning. And I'd like to explain some of them. Some of them are direct, and some of them are indirect. So at the highest level, which is also the direct level, there's Krishna Leela being described here. The first sentence, the dust from the cows and calves on the road creates a kind of darkness indicating that Krishna is returning home from the pasture. There's some nice paintings in Prabhupada's books of Krishna coming home with the cows. He goes out in the morning with the innumerable cows and calves and boys, and they spend the day. Prabhupada was saying that it's, in one sense, it's labor, but they take it as sporting. So he said, so they have to stay out all day with the cows, so what will they do? He said, they sport, they play. Cowherd frolics. And they take lunch, kill demons, and many other intrigues in the beautiful Vrindavan forest. Then, in the early evening, Krishna comes home. And there's great anticipation in Vrindavan at that time from all the different devotees and all the different rasas, the parents on the roofs, and young girls with, from their point of view, waiting to see beautiful Krishna. Of course, the boys are with Krishna. And sometimes when Krishna comes, he's delayed by demigods coming down to offer prayers to him. And he patiently stops and receives their prayers. And then when the demigods go away, sometimes the boys make fun of the demigods, of their gestures and how they talk to Krishna. They don't take it so serious. So there's a delay, and that increases the anticipation, anxiety of Mother Yasoda, looking, coming out, look down the road, is he coming yet? So the first sight they see is this, you could call this obscuring of Krishna, or this dust covering Krishna, coming up from the hooves of all the cows and calves. But they know, oh, there he is, this is Krishna. And when they finally see Krishna, this is, as described in different verses of the Bhagavatam, this is the perfection of seeing, to be able to see Krishna in his cowherd form. Next sentence. Also, the darkness of evening provokes the gopis to meet Krishna. So now this is a different image. One darkness is the cow's hooves, and now it's the natural darkness of night. So there is an advantage of the cow dust that is the first sign of Krishna. Advantageous in Krishna Lila or Krishna meditation. And the evening is advantageous for different reasons. The evening may create romantic feelings. The evening also provides a cover so for the confidential meeting of Krishna and Radharani and Krishna and the gopis. Because, as you know, this is Parakiya Rasa, so they don't want anyone to know that they're meeting. Sometimes when it's very dark at night, in order not to be seen, when there's no moon, Srimati Radharani wears all dark clothing, so she can move without being seen. And when there's a shining moonlight, she wears all white clothing and even cosmetics. But the evening hides the confidential pastimes. Thus the pastimes of Krishna and the gopis are covered by a kind of transcendental darkness. And the word actually used in the verse is tama, for darkness. And are therefore impossible for ordinary scholars of the Vedas to see. So while this the phrase is transcendental darkness is very relishable for the devotees, the word is used in another way to mean the keeping away of the persons who aren't qualified from entering into these pastimes. So this reminds me of the Bhagavad Gita verse where that curtain is mentioned, 725. 25. Naham prakasha sarvasya yogamaya samarita mudho yam nabijanati loko mam ajam avyayam. I am never manifest to the foolish and unintelligent. For them I am covered by my internal potency, and therefore they do not know that I am unborn and infallible. So Krishna definitely, deliberately hides himself from non-devotees. Although he comes into this world and his purpose is to reveal himself, when persons aren't qualified, they're not able to see Krishna. In the purport to this verse, Prabhupada quotes at least four different verses which describe this curtain or covering in slightly different ways. One is in the prayers of Queen Kunti, where she says that the Lord is covered by the curtain of Yoga Maya and ordinary people can't understand him. She also uses the example of an actor on the stage who's covered by his costume. He may be dressed as a king, so you can't see him as he actually is, as an actor who he is. Tricks, coverings, ways to keep non-confidential people away. In the Isopanishad, there's another Yogamaya curtain Isopanishad Mantra 15. O my Lord, you are the maintainer of the entire universe, and devotional service to you is the highest religious principle. The Brahmajyoti is the covering of the internal potency. May you kindly remove this glowing effulgence that impedes my seeing your Satchit-Ananda Vigraha, your eternal form of bliss and knowledge. So this is a prayer for removal of another kind of curtain. Curtain is usually dark, but here's a... You can also not be able to see something because of some intense glare. It will prevent you. If you want to blind an animal, you can put an intense glare of a lamp in his eye and he can't see. So, this is not exactly tama. This is a transcendental vision of Brahmajyoti, but it's also a covering of Krishna's original form. They become so enamored by that, they don't want to see further. But this devotee in this Upanishad, he wants to go further. And then in the same Bhagavad Gita purport, Prabhupada refers to one of the prayers of Lord Brahma in Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14, where he says that the learned scientists of the world, they may know many different things, but they can't understand your energy. So, Krishna actually cannot be covered himself. He's all-pervading. He's all-powerful. There's not something that can overcome him. But the example is given, the sun is like that also. It can't be covered. But we sometimes can't see the sun because a little cloud gets between us and the sun. That's what's happening. People are under the cloud of Maya and they can't see Krishna. So this can be derived also from this verse. But there's something about this verse that I very much like, which isn't mentioned yet. But it's indicated in the purport by this sentence here. In Vrindavan, although Krishna is covered by the hazy darkness of the dust, the gopis can nevertheless understand that within the dust storm is Krishna. Even in the dark or a hazy storm of dust, devotees can understand what Krishna is doing. So, our position is something like this, that we're practicing Krishna consciousness, but we can't see Krishna. So this verse is suggesting something very positive, that even when you can't see Krishna fully, you can have faith that Krishna is present within the cloud. By how? By faith, by hearing that here is Krishna. If you can hear submissively. We learn from the spiritual master that in the Shastra, that Krishna is in the deity, for example, in the Archavigraha. He says, this is Krishna, and he teaches you that don't look upon this as an ordinary statue of matter. This is actually Krishna. So you look, and you see only the statue, but at the same time, by faithful hearing, you don't see a statue the way a complete non-devotee does. So it's like you're seeing the cloud, but you're gaining confidence that Krishna is here. And when we chant the holy name, Prabhupada used to say that we shouldn't just talk about seeing Krishna in terms of the eye, but by the other senses also. But similarly, we can't hear, because if you remember the tape I played the other day, that if you hear properly with attention and devotion, it's the same as being with Krishna personally. So we can't hear like that. But we don't give up our chanting, and it's meaningful to us, because even in the chanting we're doing, outward or offensive, we have some faith and some realization that that Krishna is here. The verse is talking about the personal presence of Krishna, as seen by devotees like the gopas and gopis. What we experience more is the absence of Krishna. But the absence can also be a way of feeling his presence. If you feel it in terms of regret that I cannot see Krishna, some transcendental emotion, or of yearning, like that Isopanishad prayer, I want to see you. Here I am face to face with you and your name or your archivigraha or your words, and I want to see you. So we feel the absence due to our own lack of realization. But what I'm talking about is not something that I have accomplished, but is but I think it is something worth pursuing, and that is being very confident that Krishna is there, even though you can't see him, a kind of blind confidence. Within the cloud, I'm sure that Krishna is there. We hear in the Shastras and from Prabhupada different devotees who had kind of confidence like that, even simple devotees, like that cobbler who had confidence what Narayan was doing in the spiritual world. And other devotees like that. The confidence doesn't have to be only when you've reached the perfect stage. In fact, a little child can be very confident just based on his trust in his parents, what they say. Therefore, it's a great tragedy if ever that confidence or the trust in a person who's revealing Krishna to us, if we don't trust him, if he breaks our trust, then that can hurt us. But if we have full trust, and then we can have that childlike confidence that Krishna is here, even when I don't feel Krishna. This is very similar to the teaching of separation from Krishna, which the six Goswamis used to experience. And Prabhupada would emphasize that about them, that they didn't see Krishna. Although when we read some of their prayers or hear other things about them, we hear that they were seeing Krishna, or that in their spiritual forms they are with Krishna. But we should honor Prabhupada's emphasis on their not seeing Krishna, but being in the mood of Vipralamba. He used to like to comment on the verse from Guru Vastakam, that the Goswamis are living in Vrindavan, and they're saying, where is Krishna? Is he at the Yamuna? Is he at the Govardhan Hill? Hey, Rod, hey, Vajadevi, K. Where are you? Where are you? And he said they remained like that. Their mission was always unfulfilled. And they never said, yes, I've seen Krishna, like a cheap Prakrita Sahajya. So again, in the absence of Krishna, by separation, one can see Krishna. We have to take advantage of whatever we do know and see Krishna there. For example, one thing we know something about is our individual self. Someone showed me something in the nectar of Prabhupada nectar, where we had placed handwritten pages of a diary of Prabhupada's. He had a list of things about what is Krishna consciousness. And one of the points was, unless you know yourself, you cannot know Krishna. So the devotee asked me, does this mean that unless you know that you are an eternal servant of God, or does it mean some other kind of self-realization? And I would think that Prabhupada was referring to the absolute position, that unless you know that you're not this body, your eternal soul is your constitution, then how can you know God? So self-realization is necessary for God-realization. And self-realization is incomplete without God realization. But if you know the self, that's a sample of God. So Prabhupada used to advocate that a person can know God by first knowing the sample of God. And that's how Krishna teaches the Bhagavad Gita. He doesn't start about God, which he teaches more later, who he is, 4th chapter, 7th chapter, 9th chapter, 8th chapter. But in the 2nd chapter, beginning, he teaches who the individual self is. And then you can understand the big self. But although Prabhupada in his list and teaching from the absolute position wasn't talking of any lesser self-realization, we can also take it that we have work to do to know ourselves before we can understand that we're eternal servant of God. You can say it very quickly, if you can recite it, who am I? I'm the eternal servant of God. But to realize it is another thing. You have to be free of sin. You have to be free of so many deceptions. And so that requires knowing yourself, being aware of your anarthas, your different ways of deceiving yourself, and being very honest to try to understand your position. This may take the form of getting yourself rightly situated in varna and ashram, and other realistic assessments of yourself, acceptance of yourself, and striving to improve. So we can take that in a comprehensive way, that unless you know yourself, you cannot know the Supreme. And then, so that kind of work, you say, well, if I'm working on myself, how is that seeing Krishna? But that's the goal of everything. So we should be confident again that if I know who I am, that's very close to knowing who Krishna is. I'm not making a statement like a Mayavadi, but as a Vaishnava feels that the individual soul is Krishna. Prabhupada sometimes says, when we say Krishna, the word Krishna means he's not alone, but he's there with all his entourage and all his parts and parcels. That's what the word Krishna means. Krishna means me and you and everybody and everything. But of course, Krishna has his own individuality at the same time, inconceivably. Yoga Aishwaryam. We have to try to see Krishna within the cloud in every path that's open to us. And this is a very immediate one, myself and my estrangement from Krishna. But although I don't see Krishna, I'm sure he's there. Even a person who is very fallen, who's not following the rules and regulations, apparently not doing well at all, can still be capable of this. It's a great gift. There's a difference between a theist and an atheist or an agnostic. The theist may not have any more experience of God than the atheist. The atheist likes to take advantage of that. Where is your Lord? Can you see your Lord? And the devotee may honestly say, I do not, but I know he's present. So that's what separates them. This is, according to Shastra, this is our eternal nature, but when it's awakened, it's a wonderful thing. It's the most wonderful thing that can happen to us. When we meet a pure devotee, or when we come in contact with Krishna consciousness and this is awakened, then our whole lives begin their transformation. Mm. And we can see Krishna everywhere. The dust from cows and calves on the road creates a kind of darkness, indicating that Krishna is returning home from the pasture. Also, the darkness of evening provokes the gopis to meet Krishna. Thus, the pastimes of Krishna and the gopis are covered by a kind of transcendental darkness and are therefore impossible for ordinary scholars of the Vedas to see. I remember one incident with Prabhupada on this theme. It was early in the movement. One of the first devotees to leave was making a breaking from Prabhupada as a spiritual master, and it reached the point where he was not even respectful now, last time he met with Prabhupada. And he was challenging. So Prabhupada said that, you know, your attitude is not good, because devotional service must be done unconditionally. And so the person said back, I can't accept that. He said, it's not... He said, your service to Krishna is not unconditional. If the lights went off in this room, you couldn't see. So it's conditional. And Prabhupada said, we can see Krishna in the dark. So, the devotee, and that's what's stated here, Krishna is never lost to the exalted devotees of the like the gopis. In that darkness or any darkness. I like this first example of the happiness and the excitement of seeing the cloud coming down the road, and everyone is, here he's coming. And here's Krishna. So we have all kinds of our own personal clouds that we're living in or perceiving, and but even in that condition, it is possible. At the same time, this curtain is being put there deliberately, and it can make us unable to be Krishna conscious. Well, I don't know what more I can get out of it, but I've really been relishing looking at this verse and taking hope from it. But maybe by some talk now, we can churn it some more. Does anyone have any questions or comments? Yeah.
Just thinking about that verse, Krishna Daskari,
Raj,
I think, is worried that he's being too confidential with the past.
Ah, yeah.
And maybe you can go on.
He more than once, I think he's on the verge of saying something very confidential, such as describing the nature of Lord Chaitanya as Radha and Krishna, and so he hesitates to put it in his book or to tell about the transcendental madness of Lord Chaitanya, because people will think that it's craziness; they won't believe it. They'll blaspheme it, so better not speak it at all. It's a danger in revealing it. But then he writes that it has occurred to him now, because he wants to tell it, because if it's not told, then no people of the future will never know it. That would be a greater loss. The one danger is the blasphemers will have it and they'll laugh at it and scorn the Lord. But then the people who may be innocent or maybe qualified, they'll never hear of it. So what should he do? And then it occurred to him that actually the non-devotees, they're like camels who only like to eat thorns and bitter things. And the devotees are like cuckoos who like to eat sweet mango. So if I tell these pastimes, I don't think the non-devotees will even be interested in it. And the devotees, they'll relish it very much. So why were you bringing that up here?
Well, I think he says that they won't understand it.
Yeah.
They won't have the ability to understand it, so if I put this cover in there, there's no fear.
Right.
Kind of do the covering.
So right, yeah. Yeah, Krishna protects his devotees, and he protects his pastimes in various ways when they need to be not seen by others. So when we try to preach and get people interested in Krishna consciousness, that there's also the ninth offense in chanting. Don't try to interest them in something too confidential. But sometimes, despite our efforts, they're not interested in Krishna consciousness. It may be that Krishna just doesn't want them to be interested. And then we can just be detached. That I tried to preach to him, but apparently Krishna doesn't want that soul to come into this. He's not trustworthy. Yes, Tulsi Priya.
I'm thinking also, like, you're bringing up very specific, obvious kind of curtains and you know, like, there can be specific anarthas also that come within, but sometimes when a person is looking for something, it can be right there under their nose, so to speak, and you don't see it, and it's very clear because you're looking in other directions. I'm kind of just thinking of different things, different ways that Krishna can be there, and because you're not looking at him, you can't see him. And then there's also the idea of the spiritual master being a via medium, and whenever I hear that concept, I think of like somebody wearing glasses, you know. I take off my glasses, I cannot see you clearly, but you're right there, and I know you're there. And then as soon as I put them on, I can see you clearly. And I understand the spiritual master that way. I guess what I'm saying is, how is it other ways other than the spiritual master that Krishna can be right there in front of you, but you don't see him, and what do you do about that? I don't mean specifically you're seeing Krishna, but maybe ways that you can see Krishna. Hmm.
Well, I can answer by what is sort of my main point is that although you can't see Krishna, you just have to be confident that Krishna is there, and that so what you're seeing now is the covering, and he's within, and you have to just keep determinedly praying and serving the outer or the non-Krishna realization, like the bird who is trying to empty the ocean with her beak, bit by bit by bit, impossible task. And then finally, Krishna was very impressed, and he sent Garuda to help her, and she got her impossible goal. So, if like you say, if Krishna is right there, but you can't see Krishna, don't go away. Say, I'm at the right place, and I know you're there, so I'll serve you, and wait until, if you like, you can reveal yourself to me. And this can actually be the greatest joy, even better than seeing Krishna, is to know by faith that Krishna is there within the covering, within the cloud. We think of a great devotee, he's close to Krishna and he's seeing Krishna directly. But I'm not a great devotee. I couldn't be close to Krishna. Maybe I could see Krishna from a great distance. But then even from that great distance, now Krishna appears to be covered. So to be with Krishna and to know how beautiful Krishna is, in a sense that would be natural, that would be easy. To be a very far distance away and see Krishna, that would be harder. To be a great distance and have Krishna covered, that would be even harder. But that's my position, and so that's my ecstasy. So actually, it's like this is a program for everyone. The program of being directly with Krishna is only for the liberated soul. But even in our position, we can have the joyful realization that that Krishna is there, and feel Krishna's love. You mentioned the spiritual master. I feel like that sometimes with Srila Prabhupada, serving Prabhupada, worshipping Prabhupada, so many years it seems. We are faithful, but sometimes we seem to lose the lively dynamics. We certainly can't remember how nice it was when he was here. And different challenges come. But there's some kind of basic feeling that Prabhupada is there and I'm serving him. And despite the different coverings, we should never leave our commitments and our connection. Therefore, its association was so important. If we associate with people who don't believe and that Krishna is present even when we don't see him, then we'll become like them. But if we can associate with other faithful people, we can help each other. Mat chitta mat par, mat chitta mat gata prana poryantak parasparam. The devotees like to talk with each other about Krishna and they become very happy. Helping to understand how from Krishna from the scriptures and how Krishna is present in our life. Without imagining it, you can see Krishna all the time in the different events that are happening in your life. We sometimes joke about that. Our devotees do it in an easygoing way. I guess Krishna didn't want me to do this. I guess Krishna didn't want me to do that. But there's a truth to it. In a very advanced stage, it's mentioned by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. It's in the stage of Ashakti. That he's the devotee, when he's in that stage, he will be outside in nature. And he will see a deer. And he'll think, if that deer turns toward me, I think that Krishna is favoring me. But if the deer turns the other way, I think that Krishna won't favor me. So this is a being awake or being mindful. The Zen Buddhist talks about that's the ultimate realization for them, is to just be fully present in the moment as it is, the so-called ordinary reality. That's all there is. But if you instead of being distracted, can be present, then you can see how perfect and how unspeakably voidy everything is. But for the devotee, we also can take a leaf out of that book and try to be mindful of where we are right now, what's happening, but more in the mood of Vishwanath Chakravarti, that Krishna is giving me this opportunity to live now and to breathe and to be with these people, and now this bad thing is happening to me, but I see Krishna there. Oh, I'm trying to talk to this person. I hope Krishna will help me speak to that person. So our lack of access to Krishna is one thing, but some of it is just due to lack of being awake. So if we're practicing devotees, that Krishna is ready to reciprocate with us. We can do that also, according to our experience. And talk to Krishna, because Krishna is our friend. He's the best friend we have. He's the closest friend we have. Another memory of a devotee who left in the early days, then they told Prabhupada, he doesn't want to come and see you anymore. He says that Krishna is very foreign to him. Although he had been an initiated devotee, now he's saying Krishna is very foreign. And Prabhupada said, that is your rascaldom to say that. He said, if you say that you're very far from your father is very alien to you, in anger or disgust you may say that, but the reality is he's close to you. He said, Krishna is as close to you as your jugular vein. which again is reminiscent of my saying that the self is the sample of Krishna. As close as you can get to your own self, your body, or to your consciousness, Krishna is right there. There are two birds on the tree. All you have to do is turn and you see Krishna. But we're so absorbed in the material things under the curtain that we can't. So I'm answering your question, how, if Krishna is right in front of you and you can't see him, what can you do? Start thinking about Krishna. Krishna says, I am the taste in the water. You drink the water. Thank you, Krishna, for the water. Another purport, Prabhupada's, or in the prayers of Shukadeva Goswami, he prays that now when I begin to speak to you, Maharaj Pariksit, I'm first praying to the Lord that I may be able to actually evoke Krishna in your heart. And from my words, I pray that Krishna, you will please appear. And Prabhupada says, this is the attitude of a devotee. He doesn't do anything without asking permission first when he eats or walks. So you could call it an imaginary, because it is factual, I can start to practice it. I can ask Krishna permission. And we should. I'm going to drive my car now. Please let me do it. Let me do it in Krishna consciousness. Let me speak to this person. So this is Krishna consciousness movement. Not the running around distractedly movement. Or the conniving and fault-finding movement. But Krishna consciousness. Karnamrita from...
Just thinking of the coming folks in the way, I was speaking to a student, and he was saying, looking at it, that it seems unfair that, you know, God is not accessible, and I was trying to explain that actually it's, in one sense, it's mercy, because it's actually your desire not, you came to the material world. We can say there's many reasons why the coming of we're not pure, but basically, we don't really want to see Krishna. Mm.
Yeah. What you said reminded me, it was almost the same as Prabhupada answering a boy at a big meeting in New Vrindavan. And he asked, if Krishna wants us to know him, why is Maya so strong? And Prabhupada said, because your will is not strong. You blame Krishna that why don't you reveal yourself to me? That's ungrateful. Be grateful that Krishna is revealing himself to me, and start taking it in and giving it out, giving it to others. Krishna is, we're receiving Krishna's blessings, and we can feel blessed, and we can bless others, rather than take this other attitude that, oh, Krishna is bad, he's not revealing himself to me. Some of this may be beyond our reach, but we really, if we want to be Krishna conscious, we have to try practicing these things. Otherwise, devotees sometimes feel so many lack of an intimate relationship with a spouse or with the god brothers in the temple and the authorities and so on, and lack of fulfillment in their vocation and disappointment with the institution and the sufferings of the body, mind, and nature. So in Prabhupada's purport, he talks about the modes of nature, how we should rise above the modes of nature. How do you do that? It's not that you practice TM. I mention that because TM people, I remember meeting one, and he said that Maharishi said this was the main verse in Bhagavad Gita, Trigunya Vishaya Veda, that it indicated TM. You should rise above the modes and become transcendental. So that that indicates TM. But transcendental means seeing Krishna, even in the transcendental darkness. So all these deficiencies that we feel are due to lack of associating with our best friend. And we chant Krishna's name, we just have to be with Krishna, give Krishna time. Otherwise, we can't be satisfied. And really, we're not going to be so satisfied. These other things can't really satisfy us. Not completely. Marital arrangement or living in the temple, living outside the temple, is trying different ways. Can't be happy. As I said, Prabhupada, some of you weren't here. Prabhupada said, the ghost has already entered the mustard. Those of you who aren't here, you'd have to guess what that means. But you can't be happy materially because the ghost has already entered the mustard. But you have to give up that path of happiness and try to associate with Krishna. Somebody else. Look, maybe up to you. Yeah. Daniel.
The darkness or a covering, and even if we can perceive Krishna sometimes in the travails that we go through life, within our day to day, seeing Krishna in nature, seeing him in our relationships, or the struggles, and thinking we're getting somewhere with that, but then there seems to be like that doesn't even seem to be enough. That almost seems like, well, yeah, so I can see Krishna in nature, and I can try and meditate on him in my difficulties, and think he's there for me, but then there's wanting to taste him in the holy name. And then there's, wanting to really see the deity, the Lord, and have that, intimate connection. And it seems like it's just the darkness of the shadow of our own offenses. You can be offensive or not and think you're perceiving Krishna in nature, but when you want to taste the holy name or see him in his archivigra form, it seems like you have to get beyond your own offenses to really get that taste of having Krishna present.
Yeah. And what you mentioned, that's the taste we want. We don't want a vague God consciousness. We want specific Radha Damodar, Radha Krishna. We don't even want Lakshmi Narayan, and not just a mystical, somewhat impersonal idea of God. So those specific sources are there, thanks to the Acharyas and the Parampara. So what you say is that the other God consciousness, which might be considered somewhat vague, might be more accessible, but you have to be more pure for the specific direct Krishna. But you can bring a humble attitude towards these practices of the holy name and deity worship. That's called sadhana bhakti, just practicing it patiently. And you can feel that. Because my point is, even without realization, you can be confident. And then you can cross the gap. So you don't have to be pure. You just have to go to Krishna. If you had to become pure first, then we would all be hopeless. If Lord Chaitanya has opened up the gates of mercy and dispensation. You don't have to be anything. And just receive it. So, the Prabhupada, he ended one lecture. So, if still you cannot do that, after all this mercy and dispensation extended to you, then you just imagine how fallen you are. And we think, well, that's it. That's what I am. I can't even accept Lord Chaitanya's mercy. But we must not give up. We must keep trying and believing. I think of the story from the Gospel where the resurrected Jesus revealed himself, but his disciple Thomas wasn't present. And they told him, he said, "I don't believe it. Unless I could put my hands in his wounds, then I won't believe." And then he was present again when the Master was there. And he said, "Come on, come and touch me." And then he said, "Blessed are those who can believe without having this physical confirmation." And then that's where doubting Thomas comes from. And then Thomas said, "My Lord, my God," which is, I was reading, is the most forthright recognition of Jesus' position in the whole Gospels. So Thomas, although he was made an example of as a doubter, he overcame that. Like, he shouldn't have had to had that proof, but he got it, and he surrendered, and became the object of that lesson. Blessed are those who don't have to get this direct confirmation. Just by hearing, you should believe. And you can believe. That's the process. Not that you have to see and touch. Unless this deity moves and speaks to me, or comes to me in a dream, unless the holy name makes me shiver in ecstasy, I cannot believe. But even without any ecstatic symptoms, you can be ecstatic. Really? Oh, I promised.
I have a comment and a question.
Then you.
I'm going back to the devotee who left it and said, I don't feel Krishna. And Prabhupada said, "It's your rascal
job." Krishna is foreign to me, far away.
I like the analogy that the son might forget his father, but the father never forgets his son.
Well, yeah, Krishna is what happens. That's a divine providence, or kala. Whatever happens, that's Krishna's will. And so sometimes some terrible things happen. It's hard to accept how that could be Krishna's will. And but great teachers like Bhishma, as he instructed Yudhisthira, that it's Krishna's will. You can't understand why it happens. Those were great events he was describing, the great events of the Kurukshetra, why it had to happen. But even a little event in my life, something happens, then I have to... I don't always have to analyze exactly what it was, that I did this and therefore Krishna did this. But certainly, this is my situation. Now I have to turn to Krishna in this situation. I was very happy. I had a nice situation, facilities. Now I'm in a wretched position. I don't think I have to exactly understand why I was that way and now I'm this way. But Krishna is arranging things, so now is a real test for me to see if I can be Krishna conscious this way without any material comfort. But different devotees may explain it in different ways. I don't object to that explanation you gave. We shouldn't concoct things, but accept the basic existence of providence as the deciding factor in why things happen. And if that's so, then we have to abide with it and not try to change it. And a devotee, he uses these occasions to get closer to Krishna, and he always loves Krishna. in this age, the only way of God realization is to chant the names of God. So being in a miserable condition may help us to call out to Krishna. That would be worth it. Whatever it took to improve my chanting. I might not want that to happen, but if it did, then that would be spiritually advantageous if I began to call out to Krishna.
Sometimes we can become discouraged. We're always trying to look for Krishna. I remember Prabhupada said we should try to look for Krishna.
Huh.
We should behave in such a way that Krishna will come.
Yeah.
I wonder if you could elaborate.
Well, it's just another aspect of the what we're talking about, feeling Krishna's presence. You can do it in one way or another way. There are 9 kinds of devotional service, and chanting, hearing, and according to your taste, you can take one or another. According to a person's mental attitude, he can also relate to Krishna. Outward person, inward person, for whatever is natural, motherly person, militaristic person, he can go through the world and see Krishna in his life in that way, or she can see in that way. So you're mentioning that the famous statement, don't try to see Krishna but act in such a way that Krishna sees you. But that's not an absence of Krishna consciousness. We're thinking that I want to do some nice service. That's like the very faith I'm talking about, or the confidence that I don't see Krishna, and it's not even my job to go around seeing, oh, where is Krishna, where is Krishna? But I have to serve Krishna. I certainly have to do that. And I have to do something nice for Krishna, speak for Krishna, or cook for Krishna. And if I can always keep busy and improving the quality, then the Lord will see what I'm doing. If He wants to reveal Himself to me, He can. I don't care about that. But I just want to do things that will please Him. That's like the last verse in the Shikshastakam too. Ashrishava parakpadam punastumam adarshanam mamahatam karotuba. Adarshanam means no darshan. That's all right. I don't have to have a darshan. You can make me brokenhearted by not being present before me. You can handle me roughly. But you're always my Lord without any condition. So that's nice. Don't try to see Krishna, but act in such a way that Krishna will see you. That's not like saying don't do anything. It's a very dynamic instruction, and takes us away from the thinking that God should come here and dance before me like Prakriti Sahajya. For my enjoyment, God should appear. But no, Krishna should enjoy seeing me trying to serve Him. So if you're wrapped up in your devotional service like that, that's Krishna conscious. You know, think of how we'd like to be at the time we die. We might think, oh, I'd really like to be very concentratedly meditating on Krishna in my mind. Although we hear that's a very difficult time to do it. But another way to look at it is, I could just be very much absorbed in serving Krishna in some way, and then be taken away at that time. That would be good. So I'd be acting in such a way that Krishna would be pleased by me, absorbed in the service, is Krishna consciousness. That's very much available to us if we're fortunate. We're doing a service that we love, and we're executing it. And someone says, why are you so happy to do this? You don't get any pay for it, and you're always doing it and working so long hours. It just seems like an ordinary thing. You're washing the pots or whatever it is. But the devotee says, no, this is bhakti. I'm serving Krishna. So he's very fortunate that he has such a change in consciousness, because he's confident that Krishna is in this work, in this cleaning the pots. I don't need to get paid. I'm serving Krishna. Well, maybe just one more, then we'll stop. Kalki?
You were saying how he's thinking about washing the pots and I'm serving Krishna. connected, but what is holding us back? Like, it seems like we aren't feeling personal enough towards you and personal enough towards Krishna like that.
Well, we're just distracted. What you're talking about is lacking attention. And so that's discussed in the inattention to the chanting in Harinam Chintamani. It's due to being lazy or due to simply having other interests than Krishna consciousness. So that when you practice Krishna consciousness, you can't keep your mind on it because you have other tastes. So as you say, you're not wholeheartedly doing your service. To wholeheartedly do our service, we should give up other services and be a full-time servant of the Lord at whatever we do. So we should at least try to do some service that we have some healthy taste for. And but that's your asked question. What is it that I'm not able to act fully absorbed in the service? It's just, I mean, obviously it's that I'm thinking of doing some other activity, which is also another kind of service of Maya. We're not really Krishna conscious. So then the question is then what to do about it. I just pray to Krishna, please let me serve you. It's not something that is taken for granted. I remember I was giving a little class on chanting the holy names, and I was saying that the purpose of the chanting is we're calling out to Krishna, O Lord, O energy of the Lord, please engage me in your service. And one of the young children was present, and she said, I don't understand, why do we pray like that? Because we're already doing service. All the time in the temple. So it made me think that there's a quality to doing service. You may be occupied, but maybe you aren't serving. So we have to pray that these motions I'm going through, this inattentive so-called service, is not pleasing you. So I'm praying, please let me serve you. But don't take it for granted that I'm already serving. Serving is a quality. It's not just a physical busyness. That's what you're lamenting over, the lack of attention to the service. So you have to pray for it. Please engage me in your service. And show Krishna that you want it. In different ways, show Krishna that I want this service. I'm ready to serve even when it's dry or difficult. Please give me the taste of serving you. And then our service may become more attentive. All right. Thank you for such nice comments and